CliffCentral.com.
Yebo. All right. CliffCentral.com. It is a Tuesday morning. We've got Lebang Hosana. We've got Bulelo Tinta. You sounded like you were really excited by the idea of having a matric rage at your age now, Bulelo. You were getting into that in a big way.
Are you joking? Listen, when I went, right? Oh, my goodness. The best. Plus, we did a full lads tour as well. So you must know, I went overseas. I got my football sign-on check, right? Which was, when I think about it, insane. And I came back with two sportsmen that also got professional sports contracts. We started in Durban and ended up in Plett. It was insane. It was like maybe the best 2 weeks of my life. Oh, man, it's unbelievable.
It sounds phenomenal.
I don't remember much from like that whole week. It really is just a blur. It was just chaos and alcohol consumption and like stuff consumption and just messy. Very, very. I don't remember much. I just know I must have had fun because, I mean, what else was I doing down there? I just can't, like, I don't know if I can picture my kids doing that. And I guess it's a bit selfish because, I mean, I went and I had a rad time, but. Yeah. Yeah, I shall see.
I didn't have a matric holiday. No, well, I'll tell you about that in a second.
Whoa, sorry. What?
No.
Yeah.
You never went to a matric holiday.
I didn't. I stayed at home. I did absolutely bugger all. I saw some of my friends over that holiday, but I didn't go on a matric holiday. For some reason it went right. I didn't do any of that. Listen, the first time I'd ever been drunk in my life, I was 20, so I was a late starter.
Me too. I didn't drink till after school.
Turbo nerd. No, dude, I was a turbo nerd. I was like, I was more interested in like just chilling at home, and I think I'm still like that largely. But I think I made up for it when I was DJing because those parties were amazing. I mean, you know, everybody always tends to think about those things as being the, you know, you take the worst thing that happens there and that's your memory of it. Or if you're lucky enough, the best thing that happens there. But as a whole, I mean, I remember I've done so many New Year's Eve parties where I was the only person who, apart from, say, Greg, who is the organizer of these things, I was the only person who was totally sober the whole night and I could take it all in. And of course, you know, they're really drunk people who are like breaking bottles and swearing at each other and getting into fights. But that's the minority. Most of it is just people having fun and being around each other and socializing and having a good time. And there was always more happiness and joy and excitement around these things than there ever was controversy. But people are determined sometimes to be the fun police. I suppose maybe part of me is a little bit resentful that I didn't have a matric holiday now that I look back, because it seems like a fun thing. And I see all these, I mean, I haven't done matric rage for years in terms of DJing. I haven't done it for probably 10 years. And I don't think I would ever do it again, but in fact, I know I would never do it again, but I remember going to those parties and DJing and just seeing how happy these kids were to finally be finished with school, to be on a holiday with their friends for the first time, kind of in charge of their own lives and having a good time of it. I don't remember anyone in my year who had like a massive blowout. People went down to the coast, but they were mostly with their families. So it wasn't like they were doing that in my year. But clearly what you guys had was a whole different experience. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a jaw. But I just need to mention, Gareth, that like the game has changed quite deeply, including the groove game, the turn-up game, the party game, or whatever you want to call it. Back then, partying was exactly that. It was just fun. It was just good vibes, good energy, everybody. Yeah. And almost, I can say, a safe space, just all wanting to achieve the same thing, which is to enjoy having finished school and just being, you know, going off for a change. Now, it's almost like people don't party for the same reasons. There's a little bit of like a weird energy. And obviously, this is not a blanket that I'm applying to every single groove. But generally, people are going out to intentionally hurt other people. They're going out to mug you. They're going out to rape girls. They're going out to spike kids. I mean, it's just messy now. It's getting messier messier.
So especially during lockdown, I think what's happened is a lot of people, because the events businesses, the underground stuff that's been happening, That hasn't stopped. Like, there's still people having like wild house parties and their underground speakeasy type clubs. And there are places like in Cape Town, Durban, Joburg that you can go out. I know because friends of mine have been to them, where you can go out until 4 or 5 in the morning and nobody's there. I mean, didn't the new mayor of Joburg, Mpo Palat, she went with the cops and they raided a couple of clubs over the weekend. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I saw
and,
that.
And they found people partying after curfew. No one's wearing masks. People are drinking. They're taking drugs. They're doing all kinds of things. So I hear what you're saying. It's going to happen anyway. And it's especially, you know what happens in any society. I mean, this happened during the Prohibition in America. When you make something illegal or regulate it to the point where people feel that they only have one option, that is to take it underground, that's when things get really messy. And you can see, like, you can see also in these 2 years, all over the world, they've, you know, young people, like, none of us are young enough to get away with this anymore. But if you were 20 now and you wanted to go out and you wanted to party and be with your friends, you'd find a way, trust me.
Yeah, and you'll do it so much and so hard because you're not allowed to do it. That you just, there'll be no limits. There'll be no limits on how much you drink, on how far you go, like the curfew. What's that? You know, people just don't want the night to end. If they say 10 o'clock, go home, it's no longer go home. It's whose place are we going to continue the festivities? And these kids are just so hungry for that. And hey, man, just being 20 during this pandemic is just completely different. I can't.
Annette is dating herself here, but she says, 1986, Margate was the place. And then Freedom Fighter says, Margate is like Hillbrow now.
Oh, no, that's so sad.
Yeah, that's terrible. I don't know. I mean, like, what are people doing for fun when they can't go on, like, matric holiday? What are they going to do? They're not going to sit at home.
That's tough.
They're not all nerds like I was. The most vaxxed country in the world is Israel. It's also the most infected country in the world. Can anyone even do maths anymore? Yeah, but the whole point of the vaccine is not to prevent transmission. That you can't do with a vaccine. What it does is it makes, if you get it, it makes it easier for you to survive it and to have less of the symptoms. That's what's going on. And at the moment, Lebang is the only one out of the three of us on the show this morning who's worried that she's been in contact with someone who could have COVID. So we're not going to let her come to the office today. Poor you.
That's cool. Oh, no. What am I going to do? Oh, man.
So terrible for you. Right. So terrible.
But Yatish actually got vaxxed and he just recently got caught COVID. So I'm interested to see how he's doing. I mean, he'll be joining us at 7:30. So I just want to quickly pop in that question. Like, how are you feeling vaxxed and sick? You know, how's that working out?
Yeah.
But like when you do things properly, you know, the English Premier League is fully back. Like America just had a full round of college. All their college playoff finals happened. It was a big thing in Georgia this weekend, like Alabama and Georgia, I mean, which are staples. 100,000, great. Pack them in there. If you're a guest, come on down. This is what happens when you do things properly, though, at every level, you know? And we should be sad at what we are as a country. Like, we should be so mad at these people. Because I know I am. Like, nothing works. Nothing works. And it's always someone else's fault.
We wanted to just get back to some semblance of normality. And if people are responsible, which, of course, they aren't always responsible, but you've got to let people also make mistakes, you know? There's the rule of Darwin, which is, like, if someone's going to do stupid stuff and off themselves, you've got to let them do it. You can't put warning labels on everything.
And also, the reason you need systems is most people are stupid. That's when systems kick in. That's the excellent part of when things work. Oh, so and so, as any society, about 1% is morons. Great. We'll manage that. We'll mitigate that through systems. But nothing works 100%. In this country. It's infuriating.
Elon is God says, I'm kind of jealous that I haven't caught the COVID. And you know what? Robert says, no one even talks or thinks about acquired immunity. No one's talking about that. it's a real thing. And, you know, the Israelis have done the research. They've discovered it's between 6 and 13 times better immunity than the vaccine if you've actually got it. That's what the Israelis told us just the other day. And I don't think they're bullshitting. Israelis are not in a hurry to like off their own people. Just think about the history of the people who live there now, you know? If there's anyone who's not part of a conspiracy theory, it's those guys. Rob says, a different Rob says, the bill for expropriation of land has been published in the National Gazette for comment. Interestingly, it was done with no announcement, in the quiet, and just before Christmas. That is interesting. Oh. I didn't know. I'll look into it, but that would be really sneaky of those political bastards. Really sneaky.
Surprising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bulelo, I totally agree. In South Africa, absolutely nothing works unless it's privately run.
That's which true. Is sad. Which is sad, yeah. Because most people in South Africa are extremely poor. It's very sad.
Yeah. And it's all good and well that you said systems. Systems kick in when people aren't responsible. But I don't know that the systems that are being built by the people in charge here are working. In which case, you still end up having to rely on people to make their own responsible or irresponsible decisions.
Well, you have to maintain systems. You see, the thing is that the ANC never got their mandate is that you can't fix systems. You have to maintain them. Fixing and maintaining is not the same thing. See, yeah. The great nations maintain constantly. I mean, you could use our plumbing, for instance. I mean, in what world should the northern suburbs of Johannesburg not have water for 6 days? It's impossible.
Oh, wow. On that note, I'm so excited because today they've just, I got a notice on our neighborhood WhatsApp group. You know, these things, you have to be on them these days. You can't not be on them, even if you don't like them. That they're going to cut off our water from 8 o'clock this morning until 5 o'clock this afternoon. That's great. I hope they're doing maintenance, in which case I won't be angry. But if they aren't doing maintenance and it's just because they've let it fall into disrepair, then I will be annoyed.
Right, Felisa.
So I'll have to find out which one it is so I can complain or shut up. We'll have to see.
You need the current lady from my complex. That's who you need.
I would pay her to take over here. I would absolutely. So you let's just change tack here because you are, I don't know, I'm not a fan of Formula One at all, but I see a lot of people talking about it. So apparently the last race on Sunday at 3 o'clock, it's all tied up in the final race, and this is going to be a big one. So I don't know about Formula One. I don't care about Formula One, but tell me why this matters.
Me neither. Motorsport is incredibly boring. Incredibly. It's a snore fest. But unless you join us on the MKT show with Spike Ballantyne after every race, he's awesome. He loves it. I take the mickey out of it. But this weekend, Lewis Hamilton could become the greatest driver of all time. And it's literally, they're on this tide point. It's like a movie. It's scripted. And they were in Saudi Arabia this past weekend, and there were just so many incidents. But this weekend, it's all tied up between like precocious talent, Max Verstappen, and Sir Lewis Hamilton, who's avoiding tax, obviously, by living in Monaco. But anyway, that's a separate issue. Is this weekend they're going at it. And it's an awesome thing. At least we have some theater, like live theater that doesn't feel scripted to watch. I'm not big on Formula One, but this is going to be awesome. It's got everything.
Like, I don't know.
Billionaires going crazy. Great production. It's awesome.
I mean, okay, I'm also not a fan of Formula One, but I mean, Snowfest, are we not pushing it a little bit? Like, nice. I think it's a little bit like, it's quite exhilarating, like sitting there and watching these, like there's a bit of like a
no, the cars don't make noise anymore. No. And listen, people like me and Greta Thunberg, because I'm the opposite of Gareth on this one, is I'm a big nature basher and we need to bring the carbon footprint down. People like me and Greta have ruined everything for Formula One fans. So if you watch now, the cars are completely silent. There are no more noise. Yeah. There's zero noise because of people like me. Yeah. Me and Greta.
Well, I wouldn't say dare. So.
Oh, wow. Freedom Fighter says, and I don't know if this is, verified, but it's scary nonetheless. Mercury was found in the tap water in Cliptown after their water shut down 2 weeks ago. Check your water. Yeah. Oh my God. Now we're all going to have to get those testing kits and have to check our water. You know, it's one thing we never really worried about in this country because we have pretty good systems for water. I mean, like, you know, there are obviously places notwithstanding that have been ruined and where the various ministers of water affairs have not done their job. But like Rand water in Joburg's been pretty good for many, many years. You open the tap, you can drink, which is not the case in many countries. You know, something we take for granted or took for granted. I don't know how true it still is, but we used to get like a clean bill of health from a water point of view. So that's an interesting thing, just, you know, because it came up that they're switching off my water this week and that there are people who have not had water this week, which is really annoying. Okay. Some people are saying that, your voice is too loud and mine is too soft on the app. I don't know how we're going to fix that. It's, we've actually got a problem at the moment because there's a little device that I use. I'm only bringing you in on this because otherwise you're going to think I'm, you know, full of shit. There's a thing we call the Comrex that I have to use and the thing won't power up. So for the last 2 days, today and yesterday, we've been doing the show slightly differently. It should be fixed by tomorrow though. So just bear with us. If you are realizing that Bulelo's levels are higher than mine, and that's fine. Usually he says a whole lot less than me in a show anyway, so you may as well hear him clearly.
although I'm also I am quite loud. So
okay, so someone wants Christine wants an update on what happened with you and your neighbors with kids. Any Christine, news there?
Absolutely glad to update you there, Christine. That guy and his kids and his family are moving back to India. In May, so you'll be delighted to know the kids are getting evicted. It's fantastic.
Wow. Oh, that's heavy. That's heavy going. All right.
I didn't get him extradited, but he's just moving back to India. But you for guys me, I'm just glad him and his kids are leaving the continent.
You've basically got them deported. That's what you've done.
Bruh.
Well, I was trying to get them out of my complex, him and his kids, but.
So you played a big role in the decision to move back to India.
If there is a God, he came through. God said, you know what? You mediocre looking Xhosa man, let me help you out.
My word. I'd be so glad.
Oh, that's beautiful. Hey, do either of you play board games or puzzles or any of that shit? Because I saw someone on Instagram the other day, I was scrolling through and one of my friends is building one of those, and Hanan brought this up as a metaphor yesterday, the 1,000-piece puzzles. I could think of nothing worse in the world. I would be bored after putting 3 pieces of the puzzle together and I'd just give up and push the whole thing back in the box. I remember as a kid, you could not get me to concentrate on even those puzzles with 8 pieces. I was bored, stiff. Hate puzzles, but some people are into that, hey? And you can go and buy these. I don't know what the biggest ones are, probably 10,000 pieces or whatever. I'm not even sure because I'm not a puzzle guy, but I saw this on Instagram the other day and I just thought, what a horrible thing to do in the holidays. I'd rather sleep.
It depends. It depends. I mean, I do puzzles with my kids often, when they want to. They'll be like, mommy, let's do this puzzle. I'm like, cool. Whatever tickles your fancy, sure, while the puzzle piecing is actually happening, I'm definitely yawn fest. But for them, I mean, it's it's a bonding thing. It's like a thing that we're all doing together. So I have nothing against it. But would I, in my adult age, go and buy a puzzle for myself to sit down and do? The answer is a flat no. Sorry.
Yeah. Mm-mm. No, there's no way I would do it. Not a chance. Mm-mm. Right? Mm-mm. Bulelo, you're on the same page.
I would honestly rather be attacked by a crocodile and survive than have to do a puzzle. It is so boring. I don't know what including board games, by the way. I don't get people are into board games and cards like that.
Come on.
I find
30 seconds?
Oh, snore fest.
Monopoly? Always,
I never get a good partner. 30 seconds. Dude. Everyone thinks, I'm not being funny, but I do know a little bit extra from most people. So I think I'll be a good partner. And then I'm like, oh, that's a terrible partner. You don't know anything. You've never read a book.
You're also super competitive and you take no fun in playing the game. You want to win.
I want to win.
Same here.
Yeah. If we're playing anything, that's why I hate board games. I want to win. Whatever I start, I want to win in life. I don't come from a Montessori school.
Last year, it was the last time I played a board game with two of my friends and it was fun and it was I also won, which made all the difference, obviously, because I wouldn't have enjoyed it if I hadn't won. Because I used to play Risk with my brother, the board game where you take over the world. And I was not a good sport if it didn't go my way. And, I always would come up with some strategy and he would end up in Australia where there's only one place you can attack from. And he would put all his men there so that it took me like 5 or 6 rounds to destroy him. And it was just so frustrating. And I'd get really, really annoyed. And I don't think I could play that game anymore. I think I have lost the ability to enjoy it unless I win it. And that's really bad. I'm a terrible sport.
That's sad, dude.
You don't want me. You do not want me on your team in a game of 30 seconds because if you can't ask the right question to get my answer, if I can't like prompt the right answer out of you, then I blame you and I don't want to play ever again.
Oh, you suck. I hate people like that.
You don't want to. And that's also so no puzzles, no board games. I think this holiday, those must be banned. I don't think they're good for anybody. Don't do it, people.
We are so similar in that sense. I'm the worst person to have in those settings. So I don't play anymore. It also went down to a point where, so like something that always happens is my mates always are like, oh, you should play in our six-a-side team. I'm like, no, you guys are terrible. Like I'm good. Even at my old age now, I'm very good. I'm so good. An English club came and said, hey, come play for us.
Yeah. There's no way. Right. Stop talking about yourself.
Well, I mean, you know, see, that's what happens. That's what happens.
Well, Simpiwe, our own Simpiwe at Cliff Central, she says she loves puzzles. She has a few boxes. It took her about 5 days to finish a 1,000-piece puzzle. Look at that.
Oh, girl. We must
talk.
What's up.
Let's talk to Simpiwe tomorrow and find out what the hell's going on in her head that she likes puzzles. Dominoes. Look at this. John says dominoes are still popular in Cape Town. There's no snooze fest there. Monopoly is torture. Does Robin? Yeah, I think so. Cabello says cards.
Crazy Eight. Ooh, come on, Crazy Eight. Come on. That's like when you see the real competitiveness.
Morabit says, risk is part of the reason my first wife divorced me.
No, that's what you tell yourself, Morabit. I'm with you. We all need a story for a cover. Because I always...
Daniela says, I love a puzzle. Earlier this year, I developed an addiction to diamond dot artwork too. Okay.
Wow.
Dominoes are cool. See, some people like this stuff. Simpiwe started a whole thing here. Now all the puzzle people are coming in. Huh. Okay. Well, there we go. Annette says, I bought puzzles in lockdown. I'm over it now, though.
A couple of weeks ago, I actually suggested to Rina that we do like board games in the office. Just like
no.
And it hasn't happened because of the likes of you two. She was like, yeah, you know, you can organize it if you'd like. You know, yeah, sounds like a good idea. I think at the back of her mind, she was like, the fuck no. It's not going to work at all. And now I'm seeing why she never really gave me the green light because
Bulelo and I are not going to play board games. You guys can play. We'll throw in snide comments from the side. And
It's not about the board game. It's really about like how our personalities, you know, gel. And you get to know things about the people you work with when they're in those situations. Like I want to see Lilo getting that frustrated and just throwing the cot on the floor and having
All you're going to do is hate us more.
I don't play anymore. I refuse to play 30 seconds moving forward. I will not play with anyone. Like unless I knew. Unless Gareth, if you were in, I'd be like, okay, cool. Let me play. I want Gareth as my partner, but I don't want to take a chance on your IQ.
You want us to win if we're a team, but you also want to beat me if I'm not on your team. It's a different motivation. The other people want to play the board game to like what Lebang said, to get to know each other, to have some fun, to figure out each other's personalities. We are not interested in that shit.
Yeah, no. Peace. Bye, y'all.
Okay. So one or two things before we get to This Is Us. David says, Mabula, I think he means Mbulelo because you've got so many variations of your name. You're talking horse cuck. They still make a noise. It's not Formula E. Those are electric cars.
Yeah. Look, I went to Monza when I was younger. My dad's a big Ferrari fan. They used to make noise then. I hear them now. They might as well be walking around the track. I mean, come on. Come on,
man. Jared says trivia board games are great, but anything with strategy and rules, I just can't be bothered with. See, there's different folks, different strokes for different folks. What about Trivial Pursuit? Yeah. I would rather pick up a pack of Trivial Pursuit cards and play against myself, just the cards, not the game, the board, or any. Just pick up the cards and like see how many I can get. like score myself, but I don't want to play with other people. It's no good. Puzzles are a good alternative to watching paints dry, says AP. What's that about?
No, I was going to say, is that what you're doing like after matric instead of going to matric back?
Yeah, you want to know why? Yeah, you want to know why I'm such a... Correct. That's how boring I am. When nobody's watching, that's the kind of dumb stuff I do. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, I'm not a gamer either. I've never had an Xbox or a PlayStation or any of that shit. So it's not for me. Nothing you can't get me involved in that stuff either. Okay, let us turn our attention to much more important things. Bulela, we'll see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock. I'm going to let you do your thing. Welcome back to the show after a little bit of a hiatus. Yatish Nasi, how are you, Yatish?
How's it going?
He's back.
Good. Nice to see you, man. You like board games?
Not really. I hate puzzles even more. I must be honest. I hate puzzles a lot more. Like I always say to anybody who says to me, let's do a puzzle, I'm like, I don't get it. You have to see the picture on the box, so I know what's coming, and then I've got to spend however long making what I've seen on the box. Like, I don't understand the point.
I'm with you. I think we're probably in the minority, because Simpiwe is going to explain herself tomorrow and tell us why she likes puzzles. But maybe it's just something to stimulate the brain, pass the time. Maybe those people are smart in a way that we're not. I don't know.
Clearly.
Anyway, it's time for another episode of This Is Us. And at 7:30 on a Tuesday, this is what we do. And we are joined by Yatish Nasi alongside Lebang Khosana. And we're going to have some real positive conversations in this space, which are solution-based. We want to answer the questions about what we can all do to make South Africa a better place. So, Lebang, we're in day 13 of 16 days of activism. What does that mean to you? And what does it mean to you, Yatish? And then you can intro our guest in a minute and tell us how TIRS, the TIRS Foundation, has so much to tell us and teach us this morning. First of all, Lebang, you're the woman. Gender-based violence is always like profiled as this woman's issue. It's not a woman's issue, but you go first. Yeah. You go first.
Yeah, so I mean, every year, 25th of November, we see people rally together and start putting on their army gear and say, oh no, GBV is so bad, GBV is this, GBV is that. Whereas the real issue is that this is not just something that happens or should be spoken about in this time of year. It's a forever thing, particularly in South Africa. I mean, we live in a country where GBV is in itself a pandemic. And I think after lockdown, it just got so much worse for women, especially for children, especially. So, you know, it's nice that we can speak about this, but I'm more concerned with speaking to the people that are living it every single day, 365 days, and not just when it's time to speak about it. So that's why we're having Mara Dlenni. She's obviously the founder and director of the TIRS Foundation. And this is exactly what they do. They don't just speak about it when everybody's speaking about it. It's literally like it's in the core of what they do at TIRS Foundation. So again, one of the things that makes them particularly stand out for me is that they're not saying, oh no, we've got GBV as an issue. Women, let's do something. This is a conversation for all South Africans. It's for men. It's for women. It is for all of us to really, you know, to unpack. And it will get uncomfortable. I mean, it's not easy to sit and speak these hardcore facts and really be present, but it has to happen. These conversations need to happen. So yeah. Hi, Marie.
Mara, it's good to have you on. Thanks for joining us this morning. And I'll ask you in a moment to tell us about the TIRS Foundation. Perhaps I should just give the intro here in terms of, the basic stuff, because you're probably, you know, it speaks for itself from your point of view, but you guys provide access to crisis intervention, advocacy counseling, and prevention education services for those who are impacted by domestic violence, sexual assault, child sexual abuse. This is tough stuff and not the kind of thing that people love talking about, but you've made it your life. Tell us a little bit about you, how you got involved in this. We just got to, I think you're on mute, or we can't hear you there, Mara. Just see if you can get your, I can't hear you. There we go. Talk to me now. Nope. Still not working. Do you want to? Yeah, go off and come back on, and then we'll get you back in. I think I'm going to let you go out, and then I'll yeah, kick her out and she can come back. Yeah, Tish, while we're waiting for her to come back, your feelings on 16 days of activism? What's your overwhelming feeling about this?
Yeah, you know, same thing. It's especially, I suppose, with the way the country is at the moment. I haven't even seen or heard much about it in these last couple of days. It's just, it seemed to, you know, other years it's probably more prevalent. But this year there just hasn't been enough attention, right? I think everyone's so caught up in, yeah, it's back burner. There's just so much else going on. And that's probably the danger at the moment. So much in South Africa, right? There's so much on the back burner because all that's on the headlines, I guess, rightfully so, is fourth wave, other things going on. Mm-hmm. And to Lebang's point, you know, it probably got worse during lockdown. So this is just another one of those issues that is really, really forgotten. And me personally, you know, because it doesn't touch me on the sort of daily, it's not something that I'm close to or experience like so many South Africans. We tend to forget about it. Myself included, I must be very honest. You know, when I hear about 16 days, I go, oh yes, I remember that. But in my daily, it's hard for me to think about it, which is scary.
Let's see if we can get Mara back on. Hey, Mara. No, still can't hear you. Don't know what's going on there. Have you got something plugged in, like a microphone or something? Or are you just talking through your laptop mic? Because we can't hear a thing, and it looks like everything's working on our side, so it must be coming from you. Maybe Simpiwe can help you sort that out, but we can't hear you at all. Damn. All right, and let you try and figure that out again. Damn. Hate it when that happens. Yeah, okay, let's just talk about this 16 days thing from a practical point of view. I feel like this is being used, like so many other things are being used, by politicians and by corporations who hop on the 16 days bandwagon to just cover them so that they can say we've done something or we are involved somewhere. We're seen to be doing something rather than we're doing something. Because we know, and I'm sure Mara will tell us in a moment or two, these things are not things that can be solved by government or by companies. They really can't. These things need to be solved at the family level. They need to be solved at the individual level. The men who are committing these acts of violence against women have serious psychological issues to unpack. They've often got, you know, bad sort of backgrounds. They don't necessarily have happy homes that they come from. They're perpetuating that cycle of violence. It's stuff that we spoke to Charlie Peterson about the other day. And nobody wants to talk about that because it's not sexy. It's easier for a politician to get up and say, we've got these 16 days of activism. Now, I don't know who's done anything during 16 days of activism, but I'll guarantee you that the only stuff we'll see is the usual propaganda and not a whole lot of action. The people who are doing the work are doing it well beyond those 16 days of activism. They're working every day, people like Mara, to make a difference. And they're not getting the attention for 16 days, which is why we brought her on this morning. You agree?
Yeah. And it's quite obvious, right? When, you know, the government or like a big brand is really just doing a campaign just to tick a box that, yeah, no, we did our part. And immediately after that 16 days, it's like back to reality. And Yetisha, I like what you said. And I think I really appreciate your honesty about the fact that because it's so far away from you, you know, you're not necessarily exposed to it all the time. And really, you forget that it's even happening. Only when it comes closer to you do you actually realize that, oh crap, you know, this is the reality. And it's that sad concept of we'll only freak out when it happens to our sister or our cousin or our aunt. But when we see something happening like on the timeline, like, oh, this and this happened to me, you question that person's truth and I guess their story. And what we're realizing now more and more, just to bring it sort of back to the whole Jup Jup and Amanda DuPont thing, is that women are coming out with their stories and their experience of GBV and sexual assault and the public at large is just generally like not believing anything and is literally accusing these people of making stories up. And it's almost as though your truth is no longer valid because of various reasons. Number one, why are you coming out so late with your story? Why didn't you report this to the police as soon as it happened? Or number two, you know, why are you only responding to this now to attack the person? Are you trying to gain something out of it? So there's such a lack of education from the audience's side where it's like, you know, sure, okay, cool. Some people do make false allegations. We get it. But there are more cases where that is not happening. There are more cases where these women are really experiencing these things and no justice is being served. So it is one of those tough conversations. I'm glad we've got Mara on today, because the education aspect for me is just mind-blowing, because it's missing. Oh, geez, Gareth, are you speaking now? We can't hear you.
No. There we go. So let's try one more time to get Mara back on. And Mara, hopefully you can speak to us now. Hello. Still can't hear you. I don't know what's going on there. Sorry, Mara, I don't know what we're going to do here. I'm going to have to let you go back to Simpiwe and we try and figure this out. Yeah, we could probably get you, it's not going to work on the phone. No, it's not going to work. All right. Listen, I want to ask you about something you just brought up now. This whole thing with Amanda DuPont and Jub, and the fact that people are coming forward and telling their stories, which I think they need to do. You know, there's no reason that anyone should suffer in silence. I think that there are serious issues around people who do make false allegations. We discussed that a little bit earlier on the show. It's a very touchy subject. But what happens in a situation where someone does make a false allegation is it has the effect of making all the real situations seem trivial, and it makes the trivial ones seem real. And I think that that does an enormous disservice to real victims. And any time, and there are people who for various reasons have throughout time tried to lay false allegations at the feet of men and women, frankly. And that doesn't help the situation. It almost has the opposite effect of what it's supposed to do. It's meant to, a lot of people say, make other women comfortable with telling their story. But what it does is it makes them look like they might also be making it up. So we've got to be super careful about this. There needs to be a consequence for people who make nonsense allegations. And I'm not saying in, you know, the Jub and Amanda DuPont case, I know anything, because I don't know a damn thing. I only discovered this story on Friday and I'm still kind of trying to get my head around it. But there also seems to be like a game that gets played where if things don't go the way that one of the people want, then they say that something has happened, which is criminal. Now, if it is criminal, it has to go to court. It has to be prosecuted. There's an ugly and lengthy process there. Makes it very, very difficult for the victim and obviously for the person who's accused. But there needs to be a process in place here. And if people are just going to make allegations on social media, for example, that also makes it seem trivial and silly. And gender-based violence is not trivial and silly. It's not something that should be arbitrated by nobodies on social media. And there are people who are saying, you know, that Amanda's making things up in this case, or that Jub is being an asshole again because he's got a track record. But those people are just the peanut gallery. These are very serious things that need discussion. And it shouldn't be happening on social media.
I don't know. Gareth, you know, social media can be used differently. And for somebody like Amanda DuPont, somebody like Jub, even somebody like McG, these are people that are in the public eye. So they would use these platforms to speak on whatever they want to speak on, just generally because that's the nature of the industry that they're in and the position that they're in the industry. I completely understand why Amanda would go onto social media and record a video of herself explaining her trauma and her experience, because in the same way, what triggered this whole thing was that Jub was on a public platform. He was on McG's podcast,
right,
speaking very flimsily about his encounters with Amanda, using really derogatory words like smash and, you know, bang and whatever the case is. Whereas from her memory, they were in a 2-year relationship where he repeatedly raped her. So for her, you repeatedly raped me for 2 years. For him, I was smashing that. So, you know, social media is the place where they would come and speak their sides of the story and try and, you know, get their points across or whatever. I don't think it's the use of social media. I do agree, though, that, you know, when you do put such sensitive information out there and it's open to the world, you will get some nonsense opinions. You will get rubbish comments from people that really don't matter. And the real sad thing is that most of these comments and most of these opinions are quite baseless. And you can tell these people that are commenting are so uneducated and kind of one-sided in their thinking. At no point, you know, where people kind of like really dissecting both sides. It was almost just like a, well, I'm in a line.
Also, everybody's in everybody's business these days, you know, it's like, and unfortunately, what you're saying is like, you know, in the case of both of these people, and everyone's talking about it, everyone has the right to talk about whatever they want, but this was all aired. People are airing their dirty laundry in public, so it's going to become a public conversation. What do you think of that, Yatish? I mean, it's so messy.
I mean, there's two sides to it, right? On the one hand, I buy what you're saying about going, it's super sensitive. People need to be mindful about accusing somebody if it's obviously not the case, and vice versa. But the other hand, I'm thinking, you know, talking about it is such a new behavior that we're gonna get it wrong by talking about it, right? Somebody is gonna talk about it in the incorrect way or pick an incorrect medium to talk about it on. But unless we go through that pain of figuring out what's the right way to do it, what will continue to happen is we won't talk about it. So then we'll never know. So I don't know. You know, part of me is going, maybe this just must run its course and we have to figure out what's the appropriate way to manage it and what you can and can't say. Because also, you know, again, it's difficult for me to talk about it because it's just not my experience. But I can imagine someone who's been through it going, did that happen to me or didn't that happen to me? I'm not sure, you know. Ooh. And so by being exposed to lots of them, maybe starts to formulate an opinion and go, yeah, okay, this is worth talking about from my side.
Well, there's a point being made here, which I think is interesting by Lindiwe. Lindiwe says people could be in abusive marriages for years without reporting it. And we know that happens, right? We know that there are people in quiet desperation all over the place. And I think it's probably worth taking into consideration that for many of those people, those go unreported, that kind of abuse, that kind of ugly domestic situation. We've also got to remember that the most scary thing that a lot of people don't want to confront about rape in South Africa is that it's not perpetrators of rape and victims who are unknown to each other. Those do occur, but it's a rare thing. Most of the gender-based violence and the rape and all the other associated ugliness and trauma is perpetrated by someone who is known to the victim. Right? These are not strangers. It's not someone walking on the street and suddenly breaking into your house and physically abusing you. And as horrible as that is, and it does happen, that's not the reality. That's how we picture it in our minds when we think of these things. But actually, it's the husband, the uncle, the cousin, the stepbrother, whoever it might be. Those are the people who are doing the damage. And these are not strangers. These are not like random, distant criminals who we can objectively look at and say, well, that's a bad person. These are the same people who say, I love you, and then hurt you. Yeah. That's something we've got to come to terms with.
Obviously, like unpacking the psychological reasons as to why a person would do that, it really goes back to how a person was raised and their environment and how they were treated and. But the real scary thing is usually the reaction of the family once this has, you know, become a fact. I bring this up because I was speaking to a lady not so long ago who shared an experience from her childhood where there was like a grand uncle who would just rape all the girls. Everybody knew it. It was a known fact in the community, but nobody did anything about it. And when I was speaking to her, she was a little bit scared. She's like, if anybody hears me even speaking about this, I'll get shunned from the family because I'm not supposed to speak about this. We all know it. It's a fact. This is our grand uncle who does whatever he pleases to all the little girls in the family, but you're not allowed to speak about it. And that really scared me because, you know, the reaction from really the people that you trust, as you said, Gareth, it's the people that say, I love you. It's the people that should be taking care of you. They're the ones that are ultimately, by them keeping quiet, their silence is pretty loud. You know, they're letting this thing happen and nobody ends up standing up for you. And then you feel like, okay, maybe I should keep quiet. Maybe I shouldn't go to the police and report it. Maybe I shouldn't tell mom that stepdad is doing ABC. As a victim, you also just fall to silence because if the adults around you aren't doing anything about it, then who are you? Just a victim. And it's crazy because the cycle goes on and on and on. So on one end, hurrah to social media. It's given people, you know, some sort of power in a sense to be able to speak up about their stories, because in hopes of encouraging other people who have experienced the same things. But before social media, it was just like, yo, shut up and keep quiet and go on with your life with this trauma.
I'm going to try one more time to bring Mara in on this, because shame, I know she's been waiting and she's been ready and we did a test call with her and everything. Mara, can we try one more time? Hello. Oh my God. I'm so sorry. We were really looking forward to speaking to you, Mara. I don't know what to say. We've tried everything this morning. I'm going to let you go, and I promise you we'll catch up and we'll make up for this, because I do want to hear about your foundation. They're called the Tears Foundation. And as I said earlier, they provide access to crisis intervention, advocacy, counseling, prevention, education services for those impacted by domestic violence, sexual child abuse. And I was really hoping to speak to her, but I'm so sorry. We're not going to be able to do that for whatever reason this morning. They do amazing stuff. They action all kinds of real change. They bring about dialogue, uncomfortable conversations. They encourage more men to participate in these conversations, because often it's, as we said at the beginning, when I handed over to Lebung, it's women who are forced to carry this conversation, and it shouldn't be. I mean, that's part of the problem. And there's stigma around why some women don't report sexual assaults. And I was hoping to talk to Mara about that too, but you've kind of hinted at some of that too, this morning, Lebung.
Yeah, no, they really do a lot. It would be dope to have them back. I think what I really like about Tears is that they offer like support beyond just like, okay, we'll help you now with what you're dealing with. And then after this, like, peace out, go do your thing. They have like ongoing counseling, support groups, like a whole bunch of stuff that is literally free of charge. They've got like a 24/7, like free call line. If you don't have airtime, you can just pop in like a *134* type of thing. So really they cater into, you know, the needs of these victims and the needs of the people that are generally exposed to this on the daily. Like I can tell you in the townships, it's rife. And as I said earlier, literally during lockdown and after COVID began, it just got bad because now people are stuck at home.
Yeah, you're stuck. These guys. Right.
They're stuck. They can't leave the house. If your rapist is living in the same roof as you, you have to deal with him every single day in your face. Whereas before, you know, he could maybe go to work or she could go to work or whatever the case is. Now, this is your reality. So it did get bad. The numbers did go up. And again, it almost just seems like life continued and things do happen. COVID is still top of mind. Things are happening, blah, blah, blah. GBV is an everyday struggle more and more in this country than any other country. We are the capital of rape. That's crazy.
Okay. So this is why we have this show. Is this us? And what part of this do we have to face up to? And what part do we have to own? And how do we change it if it is us?
Yeah, the thing, you know, the thing I always, if you do think about this issue, the reality is statistically, to your point, Lebung, the rape capital of the world, and 99.9% of that is perpetrated by men, right? It's not like it's, you know, so I find this, these 16 days or whenever we do talk about the issue, interesting, because we focus on the victim portion, right? We go, look, shame this is happening to women and kids and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, yeah, we really talk about the elephant in the room, which is to say, look, for whatever reason, why is this a thing with men in our society, right? Why is it, you know, why aren't we addressing it? If I think about the work Charlie's doing, right, to say, Charlie was going, look, we sort of try to get a sense of why fathers aren't there, and we try to deal with that issue at that level, right? Which is to say, usually it's for whatever reason, and we're going to try to intervene. You know, in a similar way, you know, we talk so much about the victims and should they be reporting and should they be saying and should they be brave enough to take things on. But what about the perpetrators, right? Like, how much are we doing at the perpetrator level to say, should we be talking to boys at an early age? Should we be, you know, I'm not sure. Again, I don't know, but it's, you know, if it's such a systemic issue, as opposed to just thinking about how we support the victims, you know, how are we trying to proactively get to the perpetrators or yeah, I don't know.
Well, so also, I suppose we've got to talk about how there are men who protect other men. You know, there are guys who will stand up, and frankly, women who protect perpetrators because it's their son or it's their brother or it's someone else. You know how people are. I don't think there are people who go around in society saying rape is good. Even the people who are doing it must know at some level it's bad. But there's something about our society that we excuse this kind of behavior when it's someone that we love or it's in our families. Because clearly in South Africa, there are people who know this is going on and don't say anything. People who should be saying to these guys, hey, listen, this is not on. You can't keep getting away with this just because, you know, you're the father of the house or because you're an elder in the community or whatever it might be. We know that that's part of the problem. And, you know, there are moms who would never countenance the fact that their sons behave like this. That we need to address too. There's something, I don't know if it's a problem with us because of our traumatic past in South Africa and the fact that we've come from such a, you know, that people are so emotionally broken. And that's no excuse, obviously, for individuals perpetrating bad behavior. But I think maybe there's a cultural part of this too that we need to address. And that's difficult to say.
Yeah. Again, where do you start, right? You can go all the way back to the household and the nature of the household. But on a bigger scale, it's definitely a cultural thing. And I can obviously only speak for my experience. And within the Black community, there's a saying that abantu bazothi, like what will people say? And I know this isn't just, doesn't only exist in the Black community, but how I've seen it is that it's quite dangerous because you end up protecting nonsense behavior and you end up protecting these people out of fear of if people found out that indeed this is what's happening behind closed doors in our family, then we'll get judged or we'll get shunned or whatever the case is. And unfortunately, due to all of our traumatic experiences and all the emotional hurts and trauma and the stuff from the past that nobody has healed from, by the way, we just continue these cycles and we carry these things that we've learned and we just do it from generation to generation versus unlearning certain things and saying, hey, you know what? If something is bad, we have to call it out. Call a spade, even if it's your brother, your mother, your sister, your cousin. If it's you, you have to be able to call it out. And we live in fear to a certain extent of like, abantu bazothi, you know, what will they say if they find out the truth about me and the truth about our family and we need to uphold our reputation? And that is sad because these victims and these perpetrators grow up and do the same thing with their own children and their children's children and then and then and then.
Well, Global Cut Unfiltered says, it's truly a sensitive issue. It should be taken seriously. We as the public should not jump to conclusions because sadly, sometimes it is a false accusation. Raisi Beck says he's a convicted, this is obviously Jub, he's a convicted criminal, case closed. No room for any argument from that one. we are talking about the issue at hand. Come on, Amanda is a married woman. That's another part of this, you know. That needs to be unpacked. And Lindiwe says, if it has happened close to home, you wouldn't understand the psychological trauma. And maybe for all we know, Lindiwe is speaking from experience. I hope not. And I just want to say at the end of this, because we've got to wrap it up. If you are a woman who has dealt with this, who is dealing with this, there are loads of people like Mara, who I'm so sorry we couldn't speak to today, who are doing incredible work to make it just a little bit more bearable, who can help you get out of these situations. There are safe houses. There are organizations like Power who are doing all the hard work to make it possible for you to break out of a cycle that you shouldn't be in, that you don't deserve, that is not your fault. And I'm talking to you as an individual. Now, I'm not talking South African women. I'm not talking government. I'm not talking the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities or any of that stuff. I'm saying if it's happening to you, please, there are people who can help you. There are people who care. There are people who will hold your hand through the process. You do not have to face this on your own. And it's going to take a huge amount of courage for you to break out of that. But this is why we're talking about it this morning, to give you hope, to give you a way out. You do not need this in your life and you don't deserve it and you don't have to put up with it.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all we can say this morning. I'm sorry we couldn't get Mara on, guys. I really wanted to hear what she had to say. Yeah, Tish, thanks for joining us. I'm glad that you're feeling better because you had the vid, didn't you?
I did. The latest version.
Oh, man. Omicron. Is it worse or is it better?
It's a cold. Fortunately, it's a cold. Yeah. If I didn't know, if it wasn't called Omicron, I would have had two panados and carried on. But yeah,
there we go. All right, everybody. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Cheers.
Peace. CliffCentral.com.